If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 12th of February, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Lawrence Reed, Chief Executive Officer of Bezant Resources, BZT is the ticker there, and Lawrence discusses the results of a new mining and economic study for the copper-gold Mancaen project in the Philippines. Plus, I also have Nelson Law, Executive Chairman of Sealand Capital Galaxy Limited, that's SCGL. Now, Nelson explains their business strategy, which is to give companies digital access to China. Also on the podcast, as always, I have two lists, top fives, the most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll also see a lot more content in blogs, videos, podcasts, and in fact, I'm looking right now, there's an article on Emerson, that's EML, and an article on MPM, that's Emporium Group, so check that out. voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lawrence Reed, Chief Executive Officer of Bezant Resources. BZT is the ticker. Lawrence, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks, Justin. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, sounding good. Are you in this country or a different country? Where are you?
No. The whole team is, barring our chairman, is in Manila at the moment, and we're doing a lot of work here in the Philippines at present. So, glad the connection's okay.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, and of course, this is part of your news out today, results of a new mining and economic study to demonstrate robust high-level mining options for the Mancaen project in the Philippines, which is, of course, a massive copper-gold prospect. Before we get into this, as always, just give us a summary of what Bezant is about, if people are not familiar with the company, if you could, Lawrence.
Yeah, it's a pure play focus on copper gold, especially copper. It's a company which believes copper is going to soar, is looking at the copper deals already happening now, and has copper assets already in the company, including a very well-defined, very exciting copper asset, which has so far gone nowhere in the Philippines due to political risk sentiment. But if you believe in copper and you believe in the supply shortfall, at least have a look at Bezant. Nothing else. And have a look at today's study, because it's interesting, especially on grade and especially on costs.
Well, exactly. Take us through it. Take us through some of the details there. And some big figures. I mean, you know, this is on the background of you being a 1.3 million market cap. Of course, we've had a big sell-off in resource stocks and pre-revenue companies. But we'll get into that in a bit. But let's go into the study first. So what have you come up with? Give us some highlights here.
Well, essentially, you know, we had this big refocus on copper gold last year. The Philippines was getting better. Big believers in copper. New shareholder came in to support us on copper. New chairman. And we started doing, you know, not a lot of very overtly exciting work, Justin, I'll be honest. And lots of shareholders criticised us that. And that's, I understand that. But rather than go out and drill and drill and drill for the sake of drilling, we actually went through an awful lot of the projects that we have, the two projects we have, the big copper gold porphyry in the Philippines, the Mancaen project, and also the sort of earlier near term, smaller projects in Argentina. But listen, what we did is we went back through the core, the engineering. Also, we started talking to groups who perhaps, you know, some of them didn't want to leave the Philippines. Some of them are thinking, well, actually, we need copper now, so we warm is the Philippines. But we took their feedback and we took what we learned about the project with our mining engineers and independent geos coming in. And we said, well, hold on, there's some things that need to be looked at here. And we talked about them with Mining Plus at length, and we commissioned this independent study. And I'm rather delighted and relieved to say that what you see is a massively robust block cave. So you're talking low capex, big numbers, you know, big NPVs, low costs, great IRR, but ignore the MP8Vs, which I know is probably absolutely heresy, and I'll get shot for doing that because they are fantastic. But what's really exciting about this is that we've made deployment capex, investment capital, that first startup capital, much more efficient. So not only have we looked at a phase one, the first 5 year of the mine scenario in what we're looking at in terms of how this is developed. We've looked at a high-grade option, which gives you high-grade production over that initial life to bring cash back into your initial investment as quickly as possible. But, you know, the costs are still down and, a bit jet-lagged and waffly, Justin, but suddenly it looks a lot more viable. It's a lot tighter. It's a lot neater. There's new options. So we brought in something called an SLC sublevel caving option, Justin. And that's, do we have to go into block caving? It looks like, no, we don't. We can have a $529 million capex version, which sounds a lot, and it is, but it's a lot less than we did have, to get cash into development quickly and then build into a block cave. Yeah. So what this is really about is what are the real options? What does this real project look like? And taking what we've learned and what people have suggested to us as we've been talking to them over the past year.
Yeah. Well, exactly. That's the thing. I mean, we know it's copper, which is going to be a very hot commodity for as far as we can imagine, I suppose, in the future with EV and everything. But the thing is here, it's sometimes having a massive project and being a small or micro-cap company is hard work, isn't it? Because how are you going to get it off the ground? But are you thinking that there's definitely a realistic chance you can get funding for this and get this away in some way? And how would you go about doing that?
Let's start, tiny market cap, share price down. You know, I see all the signs of copper going up and have done for the last year, but it yet hasn't gone up. Okay, but big believer that copper will go up. But the fact of the matter is, you know, we have to cut our cloth. So what this report does today, or this independent, all the work we've done over the last year does, is it gives us a lot more robust ways of working with groups or groups who may just want to have a look at this project on their own to get a long-term supply of copper into their portfolio. Can we fund this in development from equity? No, of course not. There's no way we can do that. But it does give us a lot more options about how we push this forward into development. And that's what we're looking at this week here in Manila. Because suddenly the risk capital and the efficiencies of a capital look very attractive, I believe, in an environment where there's not an awful lot of substantial copper and gold available. Mm. Political risk is one of the issues we have in perception of the Philippines. Things are changing. Things will change, but we're not there yet in terms of perception. But then on the other hand, what we've done today is present some highly attractive economics, which I think are difficult to ignore in the sort of copper environment I've just described.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, undeniable, copper is the thing. And that's one other thing. Like I said, having a massive project with a massive capital figure next to it is one stumbling block. And I suppose the other is, as you said, the Philippines. Now, we don't know. I mean, like you said, there are listed companies in the Philippines producing, with no problem at all. So is the perception that the Philippines is an issue, is that a real... I mean, you're out there, you're doing the work out there. Is that the case? I mean, do people come with preconceived ideas or perceptions that it's a no-go area, or are people quite open to the Philippines?
No, it has its challenges. But on the one hand, you've got to remember that the Philippines has a huge domestic mining industry. There's you know, lots of highly skilled people, lots of mines operating. Yes, open pit nickel is problematic. But then on the other hand, there's plenty of people who do that. So there's a big established mining industry which you find here, which you don't find everywhere else. There are some people, some of the major groups just say no to the Philippines at the moment. You know, let's just be honest about that. There are a lot of groups who understand the difficulties involved in the Philippines, but also understand, I slightly tartly put it in the quote, that issues around the Philippines is what's going to be happening with royalties, what's been happening with tax. So we actually took, and I'll be upfront about this, we took the royalty conditions as the model on this one, because we just wanted to show it as a standalone project, because there's all sorts of legislation going through at the moment and being suggested, which we're looking at very closely and which we think could be quite interesting. But at the point of this is my quote, is that you can get in the car from Manila Airport and drive to site on tarmac, and you know the projects next door to Mankind are powered by grid power.
Yeah.
So swings and roundabouts, and you know, touch wood, it's safe and welcoming as we've seen it so far. But we've spent a lot of time and effort over the last year on community relations, and we've got a very good long term established team, and I take my hat off to them.
Yeah, and are you sort of hoping that? I mean, because I sort of mentioned this previously, as demand for copper goes up and the prices go up, you know, and people are searching for copper projects, this then will become more favourable in the eyes of potential producers.
I absolutely think that. I mean, I'll be up front. I've been a bit disillusioned, disappointed, if you want the honest truth, about copper's performance over the last 7 months, and metals indeed, but I don't think I'm the only one. But you see lots of the majors with lots of cash. You see a great production year from last year. You see, don't listen to me, go and look at the swathes of people talking about copper deficit. Yeah. And despite Mr. Friedland's fantastic presentation on his DLCs using assets last week, when is copper going to go up? Well, I think we are going to have to see a cessation of some of the issues between the US and China. But you look at the fundamental stats on supply demand, and I think it's inevitable that copper has to be one of the boom metals.
Yeah.
And, you know, look at people more expert than me and the forecasters. You know, you've almost got a unanimous consensus. But at the moment, we need to actually see some movement. And you asked me the question at the beginning, Justin, about share prices. Yeah.
Yeah.
When are we going to see it? I'm going to ask that question.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what's your thoughts? I mean, What's the big? I know this probably, but shareholders, what's the burning question or the thing they're pressing on the most? It's obviously the share price, isn't it? And, you know, you can't do anything about that. But what do you intend to do to facilitate the rise in the share price? Is any?
No, you're right. But I mean, yes, I could say the markets are down, but I think you know you need to take responsibility for that. You know, we've got some very unhappy shareholders. We have a Bazan Action Group. We've met with them recently. And just talked about what we're doing and what we're thinking about. But we've, at Bazan, we've tried to have a clear focus. We've cut anything which isn't copper gold. We've cut an awful lot of costs. And we didn't just rush out and go, we've got copper assets, so we think copper's going to go up. So we're going to twin the BRC 60 hole, which is the amazing goldfields hole. Mm-hmm. Of Mankind, which would have sort of been the let's stick in a sort of holes around it and do something with the resource, because I don't actually think that would have been meaningful and it would have been very expensive. Instead, we've gone back to first principles and actually spoken to groups about their views on our type of asset. And we've had a look at average grade, which is very interesting. We've had a look at average costs, and we've been through sequencing and discovered things on MannKind which are really interesting. And, you know, we've put a bit of work out today, which I think is quite important. Is it going to move the share price? Well, I mean, it's quarter past eight, I think, in the UK now. I don't know. I haven't got it in front of me. I just don't know anymore. But what I do know is we've done a piece of work today, which is key to actually progressing this portfolio and value from the MannKind asset, because it's got the right data sets in it. It's got the right optimized approaches, and it picks up on a series of things which people have asked us about. And it's picked up some things which we think are pretty important and haven't been included before.
Yeah, okay. All right, so what's next here? Well, I mean, you know, how far can you take this project with outspending a lot of money?
Well, I mean, the answer is, right at this moment in time, we've been very efficient with our capital. And we're not planning to go out and raise the money needed to fund a full feasibility study, because we just don't have the capability to do it. What we're looking at the moment is using this study and having a look at options about how we add value to MannKind going forward in the near term. And there are things I think we can do, but one of them is doing things like presenting at the Philippines Mining Club on Friday, yeah, and showing people in this country and meeting people. Now we have this study finished, and also other parts of Asia and Australasia, in a rising copper market, about what we have here and what we plan to do with it, which is, again, yeah, to look at ways and ways forwards without destroying our shareholders' investment, to reap value from, you know, an asset which, you know, as I've heard too many times, if it had been anywhere else, it would have been a mine about 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Well, it's worth probably just highlighting a figure here. So you've got two preferred scenarios, haven't you? Option four, option eight.
That's right. So yeah. Sorry, Justin. Yeah.
So the net present value, just to tell people how big this thing is, is 1.1 billion, total revenue 11 billion, 27% internal rate of return, but it's a 900 million startup capex on that one. So, and you've got sort of values that goes down, of course. Next one, option eight, which is 787 capex. So it's a big capex, but of course it's a big project. So, I think at the moment, like you say, it's. The moment, it's the wrong time, isn't it? We've had a big sell-off in all resource stocks, all pre-revenue stocks, you know, resource with China and all that, the worries about China and trade. Then it's, you know, we've had a temporary lull in the copper price. It hasn't gone anywhere. But I think once the copper price starts moving, people's minds and attitudes start changing, don't they?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, just look at you're having a look at option four. Now, interestingly, you're right. It is big numbers, great IRR. I mean, just look at the free cash kicking off at it as well. Yeah, NPV is fantastic. But look at the costs all the way down there at 19.1 bucks per ton all in. But the interesting thing is that's the small, big block cave option. And you look at the big block cave option, which we've got in there as option three as a comparator. You know, this project's an absolute beast. You know, if somebody wanted to come in and spend, I think it's under something like 1.4 billion.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at substantial IRRs of just under 30% from $3 per pound rate, and we've done the variable. We're on $3 per pound, but we've modelled at 2.5 and 3.5. And if you think that $3.5 per pound is, you know, the forecast over the 18 months, you know, it gets even more extraordinary, and the costs stay low, and the free cash kicks off, and that first 5-year mine sequencing we've modelled for all the scenarios, which people can look at if they apply for the data room and their mining groups, is really quite interesting. And then you look to the smaller end, so 8 and 9, so we've got a small scale option. Again, the economics are great, and you know, you're still under $20 per pound cost. And then we've got this sub-level caving intermediary route, which allows suddenly mid-tier companies to get access and stepping stone into an asset which frankly could change their business.
Yeah. Marvellous stuff. Well, one last thing, Lawrence, as always, if someone is listening to this, likes the sound of this and sees the potential here, and of course at the moment you are 1.2, 1.3 million market cap, but are not following the story, just summarise in three bullet points why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
If you've got any belief in metals and interest in metals, I think copper has to be the pick. And, you know, frankly, I'd say if you didn't really know anything about us other than having a quick glance at our copper assets, I would have thought we just would have been worth an investment just looking at our share price versus our resources and some of our economics. Just in terms, if you want copper exposure, we are so ridiculously cheap that if you've got established copper assets in there and you like metals, I think, yeah, copper has to be the pick. And you would have thought Bazant has to be one of the picks. And, you know, mining's all about the resource in the ground, and we have the resource in the ground.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Lawrence, thanks for that, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks a lot.
Brilliant. Thanks, Justin. Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nelson Law, Executive Chairman at Sealand Capital Galaxy. That's SCGL. Nelson, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. How are you? How are everyone?
I'm good, thank you very much, Nelson. And for people listening right now who are not familiar with your company, which is, of course, Sealand Capital Galaxy, can you explain, summarise, please, what is it all about?
Actually, our company set up through an IPO in the year of 2015. Particularly, we are announcing that we are a social media. But in the year of 2017, we are focusing on more on payment gateway and advertising from that onwards. And now we have been doing that business for 1 year more on this, particular segment.
Okay, excellent stuff. So a payment gateway and access to where? And I noticed you've, reading back through some of your releases, you've struck a deal with Tencent. So first of all, give us a background, tell us who Tencent are and what's your relationship with them there?
Oh, actually, we are a working partner, preferred partnership with Tencent.
Yeah.
And actually, they choose us to work with because we have exposure in overseas. Especially, we are London listed, Hong Kong based, and then we have the best knowledge about the Chinese market. We have the Chinese we help the overseas merchant to sell or whatever they want to do in China with that big data of Tencent.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it's, for people who are not aware of Tencent, can you just tell us a bit about them, please?
Tencent is a Chinese company listed in Hong Kong with a market cap of $330 billion. And then they have active subscriber of 900 million inside China, and then 300 million subscriber overseas. And these Chinese actually have, frequency to go out of China to spend, to travel in every part of the world, namely most of the part in Europe, France, Italy, UK, Dubai, everywhere. In anywhere there are Chinese in this world are traveling right now. They have big spending power right now.
Yeah.
And then Tencent gathering with the subscriber that they have, so they maintain a big data with their big database with all those people, data about their daily usage, the daily spending, all the big data they have. So they are actually bigger than Facebook in China.
Yeah. So if someone's listening to this now and they say you have this relationship with Tencent, and of course they're a global player, a massive company with a huge reach. Now, how are you monetizing? What's your business model? How do you make money from this?
Actually, a year ago, we already start the partnership of promoting their WeChat Pay in Hong Kong. And then on board with our e-purse with Sealand, we have around 170 merchants on board. And then they are using like Visa or MasterCard. That is a payment app that they can, you know, buy with the phone app with a QR code provided. And then we also have the advertising agency for more than 40 countries. But I have just started in UK, as well as we have an agency sublisted to a company in Dubai. So we have exposure in these two countries at this moment.
Yeah. So at the moment, you're saying, so you're providing access to this massive Chinese market here for advertising. Is that right?
You're right.
Okay. And I mean, obviously the potential goes without saying because it's a massive market there. So at the moment, how is it going?
Oh, it's good. It's doing pretty good. We actually understand and study all the business model of Tencent, and these are only the two products that which we are currently promoting. There are lots of others. We will take time to promote them one by one. But we are familiarized with what we do with WeChat Pay in Hong Kong, so we can replicate the same mode in any countries. So this is our, you know, edges on handling Tencent products. We are experienced on that.
Yeah. So just to get this straight, so are you saying that there are Western companies who would like to advertise, obviously, on WeChat, is that the case? And you provide that access, is that the case?
That's right. And the Chinese buy these products through the advertising program that we have with Tencent, and these merchants, they promote the scam and things like that. They are all using our service at this point through Sealand.
As far as your background is concerned, then, Nelson, where have you come from to be where you are today?
Actually, I'm a banker, starting in the 80s. And then the last job that I have is with Chase Morgan Investment Bank there. After that, I'm actually, my expertise is on IPOs. And then based on the knowledge I get from IPOs, I know a lot of industry. So that's why I choose that particular segment on fintech and digital media. I find it have big potential. So I stopped my capital market IPO ventures and then put all my time in Sealand to promote this segment, you know, as much as I can, because I see futures here.
Yeah, you see the opportunity, absolutely. And in a minute, I'm going to ask you to give me three reasons in summary why someone should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list. But before that, if someone did do that, now, what's the next major sort of milestone you're hoping to achieve?
We will actually get as much as merchant on board in Hong Kong. Plus, we'll replicate the WeChat Pay. We are actually in current discussion with a lot of providers to provide that WeChat Pay overseas. And then with these two, and actually we are we'll put all the resources in you know, getting more merchants on board, both Hong Kong, UK, and Dubai.
Yeah, okay. Nelson, three reasons, if someone's listening, why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
I think particularly the opportunity and scale of WeChat and Tencent tended to be the first reason of why we should be, you know, acting in your app. The second thing is that the size of the market that these company services, and its potential, it's really, really big. And then with the formation of e-purse, which is under Sealand, we are capturing this market and already begun. And then lastly, the company is already in talks with a lot of fintechs, ventures, companies, partners. And, you know, we will be looking forward for a lot of more market information on this particular segment. So we keep moving to, you know, go into ventures with this particular segment.
Yeah, absolutely. Nelson, it's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. Have a nice day.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Rock Rose Energy, RRE. At four, Bidstack Group, BIDS. A rare down day for Bidstack, BIDS this, so it doesn't happen very often. I know there's a seller coming out, a guy who sort of traded it and done quite well there. And that's what the market's about. You get long-term holders, short-term holders, you know. I see long-term potential there, and so I hold. And I see these dips as sometimes a topping up sort of activity or sort of opportunity, but I'll wait for it to cool off a little bit first, let the fall happen, and then it'll consolidate. At three, Coro Energy, big fall of the day. At two, another faller actually today, another one of my holders, Big Dish, D-I-S-H, and of course it's rallied strongly of late, so it's bound to have a pullback now and again. And number one, most followed company, another big fall. I talked about this on the weekend podcast, and video. Sabian Technologies. And so Chris Ackers took 16.9% and he's come out. He's dumped all his stock there. And you've got to wonder why. And now my theory, which some people don't support on social media, is that Chris Ackers, I still hold stock there. I did sell down some, to be honest. But I still hold stock there. But because it panicked me when he sold out. But I thought, hang on, Chris Ackers, you know, modus operandi is to hunt for shells. You know, look at companies that are failing, take a stake in them, and then when they fail, sort of do a deal, and then take the shell, and then get a private company, and reverse that company into that shell. Now, this company, Sabian, did an update, which shows the business was improving, it looks like. So that means it wouldn't be a viable target for a shell. That's my theory. So I think the update they're going to do this week will hopefully show the company is doing very well. That's why Chris Ackers has exited. That's what I hope is going to happen, because I still hold stock in the company. So SNT. Like I said, tiny market cap. But if it is improving, it could re-rate. Okay. But do your own research. It's very risky. Small cap, micro cap. It'll blow 1 million. So it's very, 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 very risky. If you're an investor, I'd suggest you'd wait until the confirmation of the update happens. The share price may rally strongly, but let it settle back. Okay. At five, most like the RNS, is Kodal Minerals. That's KOD, Bougouni Final Assay Results. At four, New Oil and Gas, Siemens Support, MDevco, Remarginal Gas Fields. At three, Horizontal Minerals, Grant of Options for Brazilian Team. At two, Rockrose Energy, update on activity and reserves. And number one is from Talao Energy, first development pod successfully completed. TLOU's ticker there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.